Big show for you here today. Scott Pienowski joins me to talk through the top 12 overall picks. We try to poke holes in the consensus first round picks in Yahoo ADP. How nervous are we about Puka Nacua and Matthew Stafford with the injury? Should you rank CeeDee Lamb ahead of Justin Jefferson? And is there good reason to be afraid of Saquon Barkley as a top two pick in drafts right now? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I am Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and join me to do just that is my good friend, Scott Pienowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, Matt. Here we are in August. You know, this is fantasy football go time. You know, we've done all the preamble, done the combine, the draft, free agency, all the spring silliness. Now the news matters. Now people out there are setting up drafts, drafting, grinding, sweating. Anxiety over the players you have. There's a lot going on here, and basically we're eating, drinking, and sleeping fantasy football 24/7. And what better world to live in?
Literally, what better world to live in? August is always kind of a weird month of the year because the workload and like the constant adjustments and the tweaking is the same as in season to me. There's preseason, but there's no actual football to talk about. But as Scott mentioned, doesn't matter. It is still fantasy football season. And Scott, officially welcome to your first live show on the Yahoo Fantasy Football YouTube channel, the new channel. So folks, if you are watching right now, be sure to like and subscribe to this channel as we go live every day, basically starting at 5 p.m. Eastern, Sunday to Thursdays. It is absolutely electric here. As you can see, the August content calendar right up here. We are just totally packed up here. We are continuing to roll through strategy week on the podcast today with topics that are kind of akin to Contrarian Corner and really like building off of what we did with Ray Garvin yesterday, where we talked some deep sleepers. We are going to talk about the best players in football today. We're going to go big fish hunting. We're going to try to get the correct order of the top 12 picks today. We're going to talk first round. We're also going to talk about how each of these guys could go wrong. But before we do that, before we get into the top 12 picks, we did get some breaking news today shortly before we started our live show today. Jordan Addison, Minnesota Vikings receiver, is going to be suspended the first three games of the season for violating the league's substance abuse policy. This obviously is in relation to the driving incident that he had back in 2024. So, Scott, thoughts on the fantasy impact for Addison, the Vikings overall, as we now know he is going to miss the first three games?
Yeah, you know, I think I take September more seriously than the average fantasy player. My whole MO is get off to that fast start, try to get to a 3-1, a 4-0, a 5-1 start, something like that. And that gets you leverage. In the middle of the fantasy season, you can start to get prepared for the playoffs. You can do things that you want to do, not things that you have to do. So maybe this is more prohibitive of a nick on Addison than it might be for some other people. And the good news is he's already been with the Vikings. He already knows his way around the building. He's already familiar with Kevin O'Connell. At least he spent a year together with McCarthy. I don't know how many reps they've actually run. Of course, McCarthy didn't see any game action last year because of the injury, but at least they've had some time to get familiar there. First of all, we knew the suspension was coming. It was just a matter of when it was going to be official. So I think people probably have already made the adjustment. He became somewhere on that wide receiver 3, wide receiver 4 seam for me, where he would have been on the 2-3 seam if he was presumed to play a full season. So I'm not dismissing Addison out of hand, but I'm not going to draft him proactively either.
Yeah, three games is a lot, man. You know, and you're so right that you take September way more seriously than most fantasy football analysts out there. And this is definitely something you've taught me a lot over the years, Scott. I've learned a lot from you. This is absolutely something like hammering September. You've got it drilled into me, man. I am talking about it all the time now, mostly because of you. And like, again, three games is a pretty big deal, especially for a player that, I don't know about you, but I didn't really know what to do with Jordan Addison anyways, because this Vikings offense is undergoing two significant changes. Obviously, the quarterback position, right? Sam Darnold is out. J.J. McCarthy is in. We just don't know who J.J. McCarthy is as a quarterback. Second is the investment in the offensive line, the interior that you're seeing on the screen here, Donovan Jackson, Ryan Kelly, Will Fries, adding Jordan Mason. I think this team wants to lean more into the ground game. I think they want to lean more into hitting singles and doubles instead of hunting downfield passes all the time. So I think there was some chance that like Jordan Addison would regress a little bit on some of those deeper 50-50 shots to begin with. So because of that, yeah, I'm with you. I've really not been drafting Jordan Addison at all. I have him ranked right now, you know, as kind of a, like wide receiver 38. Like he definitely would have been in the tier ahead of that if he was not going to miss three games. But again, still a guy I didn't really know what to do with. First three games for the Vikings, he's missing at least two pretty juicy defensive matchups here. They opened the season week one in Chicago on Monday Night Football. Certainly not going to be a bunch of takes out of that game, that's for sure. Week two, Atlanta Falcons. Week three, Cincinnati Bengals. So not for nothing, that's three pretty nice matchups that Jordan Addison is missing here.
Right. As an aside, I can't wait to see what the Vikings defense does against Caleb Williams in that first game. It's just what a delicious matchup that's going to be. But, you know, I get the idea Kevin O'Connell probably looks at the season that McCarthy had his final year at Michigan and thinks, I'd like to replicate that where the defense is strong. It's a run-based offense. And McCarthy has a lot of games where he throws 23 passes, 27 passes. They're efficient. He, you know, keeps the sticks moving, but they're not playing shootout football. They're not putting everything on a quarterback who has no pro experience. So I'm worried that, you know, when you start looking at pass rate over expected, like in the middle of the season, that the Vikings, who were generally have been, let's throw it some more, will be lagging in that stat. And you mentioned Mason. I mean, they're talking about Mason. He's going to have a role. Like, this is going to be a 1A, 1B backfield. It certainly got me worried about drafting Aaron Jones. And I think Jordan Mason, he's a guy that if you drafted early in the season, draft season, you probably got Jordan Mason a nice price. I feel like he bumps up a half round every week and is going to be probably really expensive by the end of the draft season. But I'm buying what they're saying about Mason. You mentioned the improvements to the offensive line. This is going to be, I think, the run heaviest offense that O'Connell's had in his time in Minnesota.
Yeah, I'm really excited about Jordan Mason. I want to save some of my notes on Mason for tomorrow's show with Chris Allen when we talk through my draft day blueprint article that will be on the site, because he will be featured pretty heavily there. Right now, ADP on Jordan Addison, 92nd overall, wide receiver 36. I expect that to drop down a little bit. And like I said, I'll be kind of right in line with that as wide receiver 38, 40-ish, somewhere around there. But let's jump into the main topic of the day here. Let's talk through the first round. We're going to go through the first round picks, 1 through 12 in Yahoo Consensus ADP. We're going to talk about the cons of all these guys, like how it could go wrong if we're concerned about these players. Then at the end of the show, we're going to highlight players that Scott and I have ranked as first round picks that are not in Consensus ADP, and maybe some of why we're bullish or hesitant on certain players here. So let's start at the top here, Scott. 1.01. The first overall pick in Yahoo ADP is Bengals wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase. You, me, and Justin Boone all have him ranked as the top player. Do you have any concern at all about Ja'Marr Chase this year as the first overall pick?
As you would expect in this exercise, he's the guy I have the least amount of red ink on. It's really hard to nitpick Ja'Marr Chase, which is why he's the consensus 101. All three Yahoo analysts, as you said, and pretty much industry-wide, it seems like Chase is the guy. It's a shootout team. The defense looks bad. And so what would have to happen for Chase to disappoint people? Well, I think you have to at least appreciate, it's not going to bump me off Chase at 101, but at least appreciate that when he and Higgins were both on the field last year, there wasn't that big of a difference in their production. So maybe T. Higgins is better than we think. Maybe the gap between the one and the two is more of a one and a 1A, 1B. That's a consideration. Burrow's had some injury problems. They haven't always had the greatest offensive line in Cincinnati. I don't think the defense is going to get better, but it's at least in the realm of possibility. We know the NFL is a snow globe league. We're going to look back at the end of the season and say, oh, wow, you hear a bunch of teams that didn't play as I expected. Defense does not have as much continuity year over year. Of course, I look at what the Bengals did to quote unquote fix their defense, and none of it really resonates with me. I think it's going to be a lousy defense again. I talk about them as a narrow target tree, as a carnival team, all these things that we're trying to focus on, which is why Chase is my 101. But you want to talk him down? Higgins is pretty good. Burrow's had some injury problems. Part of that's been tied to a substandard offensive line. And maybe, I don't know, maybe they fix the defense or at least bump it up to acceptable, although I'm not holding my breath on that.
I'm not holding my breath on that either. I think even if they're better on defense, like, okay, great. They're the 28th best defense in the league instead of maybe 31st or 32nd. So yeah, I think this team still profiles as, you know, we couldn't do it when we talked about who's this year's carnival team, because the Bengals were the carnival team of last year, to use one of your terms, but they fit so cleanly in that regard. I really think the only ways that Chase can fail this year, and I'm talking like bust, not you draft him as wide receiver one and he finishes as wide receiver four or something like that, is he gets hurt.
You should, by the way, but you should take that, by the way. If you told me Chase was going to be wide receiver four, I would take that. The goal, yeah, you want him to blow up fantasy, but all you want in the first round is that foundational brick. You want the guy to have a Pro Bowl season, right? If he has the offensive player of the year season, all the better, but just don't get lost in the definitions, right? As long as Chase is good, is really, really good and stays healthy, he's validated where you took him. I'm sorry to interrupt you there, but I get crazy when people say, oh, I drafted this guy as a wide receiver three. He was wide receiver seven. That will never hurt you. That's good, right? You just want that guy to be good. You're going to try to make profit elsewhere in the draft. You really can't make profits in the first round.
Right. You're taking him as the first overall pick. Like, you can't go up. Yeah, you're hoping he's the best player.
You can't make a hole in one and write down zero. It doesn't work like that. Yeah,
exactly. Correct. Yes. Yeah. He can't pick him negative one or something like that. So yeah, I really think, again, we can keep it moving here, because the only reason I think he fails is a Burrow injury, a Chase injury, and really, like, man, I think as a player, Chase is getting better every single year. Like, and I think he's one of these guys that works to get better every single year. I'm just, he's a great player, and I love the way they used him last year. And even if guys like, I don't know, Jermaine Burton actually makes the team and gets playing time, or, you know, Higgins plays an entire year, that just allows them to move Chase around the formation even more, which is just good news for him as a player. But let's keep moving here, because I think our second overall pick here, Eagles running back Saquon Barkley, he's the second overall pick, consensus Yahoo ADP. But actually, Scott, none of us, me, you, or Boone, have him ranked as the second overall player. Boone and I have him ranked as the third overall player, behind the guy that we'll talk about next in Bijan Robinson. But you have Saquon Barkley ranked as the sixth overall player. So you already kind of have these reasons in your head percolating about why Barkley maybe won't fail, but might be disappointing. Talk about what can go wrong here for Barkley this season.
Yeah, there's two stats I really can't unsee. The first one, everybody knows it, including the playoffs, 482 touches, which is just an enormous number. And we're talking about somebody who's headed into his eighth NFL season, had some injury problems, as many running backs do, although it seemed like no running backs other than McCaffrey got hurt last year. But 482 touches, enormous number. A guy who's already deep into his career. And last year, no one-yard touchdowns. And his average length of touchdown was 29.4 yards, which is just an unsustainable, unrepeatable, not-going-to-happen-again number. So Tush Push survived. They tried to get rid of it. They couldn't get rid of it. It's hard to kill. It's a die. You know, Bruce Willis, Die Hard. The Tush Push is still here. Jalen Hurts runs it well. The Eagles, they have the offensive line to do it. They have that kind of nerve to keep running it. Like, go ahead and stop it. You know, it's almost like an arrogance to them. And why shouldn't they be? They're really good at a play that is incredibly valuable to keeping the offense efficient and getting those touchdowns you need when you get in close. So I think Barkley's touchdown count is a little bit tenuous, and his workload that he's coming off and where he is in his career. I always want, the longer I play fantasy, the more I want to trend younger, younger, younger. And I get nervous taking these. And I realized last year was a great year for older running backs, and so many guys changed teams, went to better situations. We saw Henry do that. We saw Barkley do that. We saw Jacobs do that. And they were all winners. But I'm nervous to take a guy when I can take some of these players who haven't had their best season yet, like a Robinson, like a Gibbs, some of these guys who are younger who are in good situations too. There's no way I'm taking Barkley second overall. And if he fails, it will be because the touchdowns came in way under expected, or that workload caught up to him.
Yeah, it really was a perfect storm for Barkley last year. Like, last year was the year to draft Saquon Barkley because it was coming at a discount. The Eagles team obviously was a little bit misunderstood. We did not know that they were going to go from a problematic defense to the best, if not just one of the best defenses in football. And that's something that just two things here were working against. And this is like, this is kind of stupid trendy analysis that I don't really love, Scott, but number one, like, when's the last time the running back won overall repeated? I think it's been quite some time. Secondly, like, we know defensive, and this is like less so trends, this is just the reality of defensive football. It's very, it's not predictive year to year, right? It's, there's a lot of variance year to year in who's the best defenses in the league. I still, like, we rank top 10 defenses on Football 301. I had the Eagles 3, which is like baking in some kind of defensive regression there, by the way. But again, like, what if the defense, like a couple injuries, like Jalen Carter misses time, that defense becomes a bit of an issue, or like even just an average unit? Are they constantly in the game scripts where they're just leaning on teams in the second half with Saquon Barkley and he's cracking off these big runs? Like, and if they had to do that, I still think they have the personnel to be a really good passing team. They have one of, if not the best wide receiver duos in the NFL, AJ Brown, Devontae Smith. I've still gotten, you're going to hate me for this, Scott, but I've still just got like the tiniest candle lit for Jahan Dotson. Stop laughing. You're laughing at me before I even finished the sentence, because you know what I'm going to say, but that's fine. I still have like the tiniest candle lit for Jahan Dotson as a nice wide receiver 3. They have an offensive line that can pass block. Like, if they wanted to throw the ball more this year, I think they could. And also, again, not for nothing, they are changing over offensive coordinators again. The last time we saw them do that, go from Shane Steichen to Brian Johnson, it did not go well. Now, I think Kevin Petullo is probably a little bit more up to this job because he's been with Nick Sirianni for a long, long time. He is the passing game coordinator. But again, just these like little slight changing variables can make Bijan Rob, or to can make Saquon Barkley, like, not the running back one overall, but somebody that is maybe the, again, like a bit of a problematic pick that high in the draft.
So if you were an anti-Barkley guy, could I interest you in Shipley? Could I interest you in AJ Dillon? Is there a deeper sleeper in this running back room that might find the bottom of your roster?
Based on the camp reports, it's probably Shipley. And honestly, I don't even think that you have to be an anti-Barkley guy to want to take Shipley, right? I mean, just in the very, very, very like late rounds, if you're in a deeper format, you're in one of these 18-round guillotine leagues, like throw Shipley on the end of your 18-team guillotine leagues, throw Shipley on the end of your bench, see what happens, because you just want exposure to this offense. I still think this is going to be one of the best offenses in the NFL. Honestly, Scott, like, I don't really have, I'm throwing a lot of like devil's advocate things out for Barkley. To me, it's just the touch total 1 year to the next. Like, that's how this goes wrong for Barkley. And I mean, how do you, I don't know. I think you're actually accurately accounting for that as like, hey, you still have him as the sixth overall player. You're not saying Barkley's going to be terrible this year. You're just saying like, account for some of the risk versus the reward here.
Yeah. I want to bake in some of that. And again, take players who haven't had their best season yet. And as far as Shipley and Dillon and some of these other backs go, everybody seems to have a different opinion on this, but I am not of the mind that you insure your running backs on draft day. I want to get the backups of other people's running backs. Yeah. And I'll think about that running back insurance in the middle of the season. You want to play for the beginning in August. You want to play for the more specialized situation. Maybe when is backup running back season for me? Maybe it's late October, early November, when you have a lot. And also by then we should know who the clear number two is on most teams anyway. So that also helps that definition. But I would say don't share your running backs in August, but I'd be willing to do that in the right situation in October.
All right, let's jump to the third overall pick in Yahoo Consensus ADP. That is Falcons running back Bijan Robinson, who, again, me, you, and Boone are all in lockstep. We have him ranked as the second overall pick, our running back one. And Scotty, if somebody came to me and said, hey, Harmon, like, I want to take Robinson first in the draft, I wouldn't fight you over it. I think, like, look, has he had that season yet in his career where he is the 2024 version of Saquon Barkley, where he is the Niners Christian McCaffrey version? Like, he hasn't quite had that yet, but I don't know, Scott. I look at this guy, I watch him play. He could totally do that. I actually think there are ways where the Falcons run game can get better this year. But again, our job here today is to be a little devil's advocate. How can it go wrong for Robinson as a top three selection here? And I might be asking you to stretch because we're bullish on this guy.
Yeah, I'm laughing because I just want to talk him up. You know, I just want to, as you said, I would not talk anybody out of taking Robinson 101. That's how confident I am on him. And we saw Zach Robinson, their offensive coordinator, struggle with the play sheet early in the season, but he really got cooking in the middle of the year. And of course, they made a quarterback change. So what could go wrong? Maybe Michael Penix isn't that good. What could go wrong? Maybe the defense is awful. That NFC South, we keep talking about that division. It's going to be a high scoring division. Obviously, you only play six divisional games, but those NFC South games are going to have a primary spot in my TV lineup because it's just going to be the first team with 35 wins. So I'm all for that. Robinson, of course, can play in all packages. Tyler Algier is a pretty good backup. he's somebody who's going to have a role. It's not going to be Robinson isn't going to be like Chase Brown was last year. He never comes off the field. You think like Matt Forte in his heyday, some of these backs, you know, the bell cow is kind of a dead thing. I'm not sure they'll really treat him as a bell cow, but he'll still have high usage when you compare him to the rest of the league, just with the shape of things are going. The running game has made a big comeback in recent years. Defensive fronts are getting lighter. They're saying, go ahead, run the ball in the offense. They're saying, yeah, you know, we'll do just that. Obviously, Robinson was drafted to be a primary player. So how's it fall apart? Obviously, any running back has a high injury risk, so you have to consider that. I'm not telling you anything there. Maybe Zach Robinson, maybe it was a mirage that he kind of got cooking in the second half. Maybe Algier plays a little bit more than we think. Maybe the defense isn't quite up to snuff and they have to throw the ball more than they want to. But I'm saying this, my heart isn't really in it. I want you to draft Bijan Robinson. I just want to leave you with that.
My heart's not in it either. I actually think that Michael Penix being like, people think about Michael Penix as a vertical passer, right? And he is, like, he wants to throw downfield. He's aggressive. We're going to talk about another Falcons player here when we get to my top 12 that I'm extremely excited about. And it's not Kyle Pitts. Mm-hmm. It's a different pass catcher there. But Michael Penix actually gets to his check down pretty quickly because he is not like, he's an athletic guy. He ran a fast 40, but he's not a scrambler. Like, he does not want to take off and run. He wants to hang in the pocket and rip it downfield. But he's actually pretty smart about reading things out and getting to that check down. And I think that check down is going to be Bijan Robinson a lot. Like, I think he is going to catch more passes this year than we've ever seen before. And I'll give you one other positive note here on Bijan Robinson. You see how I tossed you for the negative stuff and I didn't pick any of it back up? I was like, I'll just go positive here on Robinson. Super unfair hosting by me. Last year, the Falcons had 71% of their runs. They were zone concept runs last year, according to Fantasy Points data. That was first in the league by a freaking mile. The second was Arthur Smith's Pittsburgh Steelers at just under 60%, of course. But the Falcons actually had the highest success rate on gap runs last year at 61%. So, and gap runs typically seed more big plays. Like, that's something where we talk about, hey, Bijan Robinson needing to hit more home runs to really reach that next fantasy ceiling. If they just, hey, year two of the offense, we install a little more tweaks in the run game. We've seen Zach Robinson comes from the Rams. They eventually did that there. Shoot, we're cooking with some more bigger plays for Robinson. So, yeah, Scott and I are in lockstep here. Robinson is well worth this third overall ADP, and it's someone that we want you hammering in drafts if you get one of those picks.
And he was, for the last two-thirds of last season, I mentioned Robinson kind of struggling, Zach Robinson kind of struggling with the play sheet early in the year, and Cousins limited their playbook as well. Over the last two-thirds of the season, Bijan Robinson was a running back too. We've already seen it. You don't even need to like make a speculative, you know, imagine it thing. I feel like it's already happened.
All right, let's get to the fourth overall pick here in Yahoo ADP. This is another young running back, Jahmyr Gibbs of the Detroit Lions. Man, Gibbs absolutely ripped it late last season. I've said this a lot. I had Gibbs on a lot of fantasy teams last year. And look, I love David Montgomery. I never wish injuries on players. But man, watching Jahmyr Gibbs late in the year without David Montgomery was a joy. He was awesome. Obviously, David Montgomery's back with this team. Ben Johnson has left. Nevertheless, Scott, you have him as the third overall player. I have him fourth. And our buddy Justin Boone has him fifth. So I actually, look, I'm in on Jahmyr Gibbs. Clearly you are too. But I actually think it's kind of easy to poke holes in his case here. But why? So let's maybe not necessarily focus on the negatives, which are no Ben Johnson, offensive line is turning over, David Montgomery's still there. Boom. Those are the negatives. It can go wrong because all those three things, Montgomery stays, the offensive line takes a step back, and the offense itself takes a step back without Ben Johnson. So why are you kind of not worried about those three things and are more focusing on the positives for Gibbs?
Yeah, I mean, you outlined everything I was going to say on the negative side, and I am concerned about the offensive line, but Gibbs is such a great player in space, and he's a dynamic pass catcher, and maybe the Lions have to score more this year. We'll see what the defense does. Last year, it's hard to judge how good the defense is because everybody got hurt last year, and they became that shootout team that had to score. They're not going to score 33 points a game. Again, nobody expects that. We'll see. You know, Morton, an unknown as a play caller, but you know, he was somebody who they felt good about. And Jared Goff, as they always say this, he's a veteran quarterback. He's part offensive coordinator too. He's not going to forget the plays that he likes. But if you draft Gibbs, you just have to have the emotional resolve that you're going to watch the Lions game. You're all excited. They're playing on Sunday night. They're playing on Monday night. They're playing on Thanksgiving. Let's get Gibbs going. and there's going to be David Montgomery drives, not David Montgomery work. Yeah. I mean, a drive where it's all David Montgomery, where Jahmyr Gibbs is standing on the sidelines, or they're going to get a pass interference call at the goal line, and it might be Montgomery. Gibbs, again, may not be on the field. You have to be okay with that. But I feel like Gibbs was so electric at the end of last season. There's a genie out of the bottle thing that how do you unsee that? And as much, I'm a David Montgomery fan. He's a good player. And we've seen the Lions, you know, Dan Campbell loves the spirit animals, right? Jamal Williams was that guy for a while. And he had a season where he scored a bushel of touchdowns. Was it 25 touchdowns for Montgomery the last two seasons? And that's despite missing time with injury. I feel like Montgomery is already in the end zone 10 times. But Gibbs, I don't know how they unsee what he did last year when he had the backfield to himself. I think he's definitely the back who will get more work. Part of it will be on merit. Part of it will maybe be by necessity. So I'm still confident on him. Again, you have to sweat the line. You have to sweat the play calling. And you have to sweat that this is definitely some form of a committee. But I think Detroit knows who their number one guy is. I think they know who their bread is buttered with. And Gibbs is somebody I definitely would take confidently in the first half of any first round.
You mentioned the, you know, David Montgomery aspect of it all. Like he gets whole drives to himself. I do think that where like David Montgomery would usually get the first couple of drives and then it would be Gibbs, that I think is going to flip. Like I do think they'll give Gibbs entire series off, which for a player of his size and his archetype, they probably always need a second pitch there. I don't think that David Montgomery is going to be like the first guy on the field there. I think it will be Jahmyr Gibbs because you mentioned it. Like you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. You can't put the genie back in the bottle. Like you've seen what Jahmyr Gibbs can be. And I do believe this team loves Gibbs. He's a special player. Don't love him wearing the number zero, by the way. I kind of think the 26 did him well, but separate conversation. I don't really love number zero in general. I'm kind of out on that, but again, separate conversation.
Jahmyr Gibbs. I didn't know that, man. I could derail this show right now. Yeah, why would you change a number that was successful for you, right? You just led the league in rushing touchdowns. You just had a 20 rushing and total touchdowns. Don't change what works, man.
Jameson Williams also went from 9 to 1. I mean, there's a lot of change in that Detroit Lions offense, Scotty. It's not just Frank Ragnow retiring. It's not just Ben Johnson and Antoine Randall going to Chicago. We got big time players changing their numbers.
I want to see
Amon-Ra St. Brown going to change to 4? I don't know about this.
I want to see the receivers make a comeback to the 80s numbers, right? They had to sell CeeDee Lamb.
You and me both.
I'm wearing 88 because it's a legacy number in Dallas because Michael Irvin wore it and Drew Pearson wore it and, you know, Dez Bryant wore it, right? And he's like, he wanted to go low, like all the receivers want to go low. And I'd like to see the 80s make a comeback.
Me too, bro. This is my most boomer take, is that I love the 80s. And I do not like a lot of, like the single digits, it's whatever. The teens, it's fine. I love the 80s. 81, like, come on. You're out there wearing 81. You're a star wide receiver.
Yeah, you're Terrell Owens, man. We're 81, you know? I mean, Jerry Rice wore
84. 80. Randy Moss? I mean, come on. What are we talking about here?
87? Yeah, right. Yeah, in 81 in New England. I'm also not a 0 or 1 guy. I think 0 and 1 should be reserved for, you know, kickers and, you know, middle infielders.
Zero
and stuff,
stinks. You know? Zero stinks. I mean, you're asking, especially as a wide receiver, you're asking for trouble for 0. But I'm gonna get us back on the rails here real quick. Just last words on Jahmyr Gibbs. He's another guy that, okay, maybe you take him at running back 3 and he finishes at running back 6, but I think the floor is very high on him. You can maybe take a small loss, but again, we talk about what happened with David Montgomery when he was out. What if David Montgomery misses time again? Like, we're talking about the running back 1 overall. We're talking about a league-winning player. So sometimes you're not drafting off the projections. You can draft into a little bit of upside here, and I think that's the case with Jahmyr Gibbs.
What's your level of concern? I got to ask this. 1 to 10, what's your level of concern on the offensive line?
Like a 6, 7? I think the interior
is going to go 5. I was going to go 5, but yeah, concern for sure.
I mean, 6 just because, you know, it's two young players, Christian Mahogany and Tate Ratledge. Obviously, like if Tate Ratledge is a good starter right away, like that goes down to a 4 to me, but we just don't really know. And I also don't love that they pitched like, hey, Tate Ratledge is going to be our center all off season after they drafted him. And then like one practice into training camp, like, yeah, actually, we're just going to put it back at guard. We're going to put it back at guard. So I don't know. To me, I think it's got to be a level of concern, and just that goes to the entire offense. But let's stick in the NFC North. Let's get to the 5th overall pick, a wide receiver who doesn't wear a number in the 80s. But man, could you imagine if Justin Jefferson wore 84? You know, talk about Minnesota Vikings. you know, legendary number. But Justin Jefferson is the fifth pick off the board right now in fantasy drafts. Scott, this is a guy that you have at fourth. I actually have at sixth. I have the next wide receiver we're going to talk about ahead of Justin Jefferson. Any concerns for you about some of the stuff we talked about at the top with Jordan Addison, them moving away from like a downfield passing attack, new quarterback installed here, maybe the most run heavy offense we've seen. And not to put you on the spot, Scott, use your words against you, but what about injury optimism? What about not drafting guys who are currently hurt? Because Justin Jefferson is dealing with a hamstring injury, a soft tissue injury as we speak right now.
Yeah, all good points. And I think it's important. We mentioned it a little bit earlier, but to just reiterate, I think J.J. McCarthy is going to be very efficient, but I'm really concerned about the volume of this passing offense and maybe the target count. It's going to be a case where the target share with Jefferson might be fine and the yards per target may be fine, but they're just not throwing the ball as much. They don't need to throw the ball as much. I really like Brian Flores in that defense. So it's a case of I want my first round receiver, I want him having 10 targets off the bus. And that's Jefferson's generally been that guy. This offense may not have that framework. And what if that rebuild offensive line, those two good backs, what if they control the game? They don't want to overwhelm McCarthy as he steps into his NFL career. I'm just getting these Michigan vibes, man. It's again, it's going to be like, oh, McCarthy was really good today. 17 for 25 for 189. Didn't turn the ball over. Didn't take a sack. And Jefferson owners are like, yeah, 5 for 72 wasn't what I paid for. No touchdown. You know, you have to get used to that. And I'm open-minded to moving Jefferson lower in my rankings. He's an unbelievable player. I think McCarthy will eventually be fine. But I think Kevin O'Connell is a smart quarterback, a smart coach, a smart massager of quarterbacks. And he's not going to ask J.J. McCarthy to be Superman right away.
No, yeah, I don't think asking him to be Superman right away. And I still think, though, he will be like a very, very high target share player. And you know what that total target ends up being for Justin Jefferson? He's the guy in this passing offense that I think is just too big to fail, right? Like, I mean, if they're going to lower the pass attempts, that's just going to be more volume towards Jefferson. It's not going to be like, all right, we're spreading it out too much. And obviously, if he can get back and he's healthy, like he's practicing in a couple weeks, I don't really care too much about the hamstring injury. And again, it's a really nice opening season schedule. As we talked about for Jordan Addison, Justin Jefferson is going to get all of that work in the wide receiver department. Like Jalen Naylor is not picking up enough targets to start in fantasy. Ty Felton, who's an interesting like after catch player, is not going to suddenly become a big time fantasy contributor. It's going to be all Justin Jefferson all the time. So I'll just transition this to the next player here because he's the guy I have ranked ahead, and it's a small difference. CeeDee Lamb is the sixth overall pick. I have him one spot ahead of Justin Jefferson, Scott, and I'm so bought in on this Cowboys offense. I hate it. I don't love saying good things about the Cowboys because it makes producer Colin happy. That, you know, that makes me disgusted with myself. But I'm just really bought in on this wide receiver duo of George Pickens and CeeDee Lamb. Dak Prescott back healthy, good interior offensive line, not a strong running game. I think they could lead the NFL in pass attempts this year. And we've already seen CeeDee Lamb have one of those seasons. So I don't know, Scott, like talk me down from the CeeDee Lamb, you know, early first round pick. Like what could go wrong for the Cowboys this year?
Well, as you were talking, I actually bumped Lamb over Jefferson in my rankings. So that's, shows aren't just for the listeners. They're for me to sharpen my own rankings. And we got to sharpen them because Boone came in and that guy's been a ranking god for several years. So, you know, we got to level up to Justin Boone.
We can't get dunked on, bro.
No. No, absolutely. So, you know, I've been, I'm in the best ranking shape of my life. I want people to know that. But you want me to talk down CeeDee Lamb? I can look, my heart may not be totally in it, but I can do it with two words. Those words are Brian Schottenheimer, who never met a running play he didn't like. But the thing is, I don't like their backfield and I hate their defense. Yeah. And that's with or without Parsons. We'll see if they can patch that up or not. I mean, who knows with Jerry World what's going on. But end of the day, I expect they're going to force Schottenheimer's hand. They're going to have to play a lot of shootouts. If Dak can stay healthy, we've seen him. He made an MVP run a couple of years ago. Pickens is a dynamic player. This is a very, very condensed target tree, too. We're talking Lamb. We're talking Pickens. Ferguson is kind of the lesser of the three options there, and that's it. I don't see anybody else you really need to think about drafting who's going to catch passes. So Yeah, giddy up on CeeDee Lamb, man. I know this is supposed to be the talk down show, but I'm talking him up. And I just moved him over Jefferson as we were talking. So that's how I feel about that. And it's a good day to be a producer, Colin. It's a good day to be a Cowboys fan. It won't be in December. Something will go wrong with this team, because something always does. But
who cares? That's not our problem.
They're going to be fun.
Not our problem in fantasy football.
They're going to be a lot of 33-30 games in Dallas. I guess what could go wrong? Those sun games that you have in Dallas, how did Jerry World get built where the passes get dropped in the sun? How the heck did that happen? But so put on your eye black, CeeDee Lamb. You're going to need it. But man, he's going to catch like 130 balls.
Dog, you got a really good first round pick where it's like concerns, cons, sun in stadium. That's when you know you've got a really good first round pick there.
Second quarter sun. Yeah.
Yeah, second quarter fantasy points over expectation going to be low for CeeDee Lamb. I would say the only thing I'd be like minorly maybe worried about from a ceiling case is, George Pickens, obviously, I think is going to be a big-time touchdown scorer. I'm so bought in on Pickens, it makes me nervous. I'm afraid of how high I am on the Pickens stuff this year. And you know me, I've always been a little bit skeptical about him, but I'm just really thinking he's going to be great this year. And, if he catches, double-digit touchdowns, if he's just the monster in the red zone, does it maybe make CeeDee Lamb, a 7-touchdown receiver, and then you've really got to make it do on receptions? But CeeDee Lamb is so good that I can't really, as much as I like Pickens, I can't get there that Pickens is really taking away from CeeDee Lamb. If anything, I think these two guys are only going to make each other better.
Yeah, you mentioned too big to fail with Jefferson. That's how I feel about Lamb, because we know one playoff game to the side, Ferguson has not been a touchdown guy, and I don't see a touchdown gobbler in the backfield. Prescott used to run for touchdowns. That's been absent from his game to the point that's probably been shelved for good. So even if you told me that Pickens had a career year, which is totally in play, I think Lamb is still, his projection is very stable, and I'd be shocked if he didn't get to double-digit touchdowns along with the volume that we all know and love. And, of course, in Yahoo leagues, we know half-point PPR is the standard, so you're gonna love this volume. It's Dallas games, man. I know that they're polarizing teams. A lot of Cowboy fans, a lot of front runners out there, and there's a lot of people who hate this franchise. I mean, they could honestly put them on national TV every week, and I'd be fine with it.
All right, we are going to take our first break. When we come back, we will talk through some more tenuous first-round picks as we get picks 7 to 12 in the next segment right after this. All right, we are back. We are continuing to talk through the first round picks in Consensus Yahoo ADP. Shout out to the people in the chat, including our buddy Ray Garvin, who's on the show. Yeah, Ray loves the show so much. He was on it yesterday. He's hopping in the chat today. We love you, Ray. We appreciate you, buddy. For everybody else in the chat, why don't you guys tell us who you think is a first round pick that's not a first round pick in ADP, but should be? You drop that in the chat. Drop that in the comments if you're watching it later. Give us your full correct order of top 12 picks. But we're going to continue to go through the consensus right now, starting with pick number 7, Derrick Henry, Ravens running back Scott Pienowski. Look, the big dog continues to defy age. We all actually have him ranked a little bit lower than this from the overall ranks perspective. You've got him not too far behind, number 9. I've got him 10. Boone actually has him, rankings God himself. He's got him at 15. So maybe Boone's got the most concerns about Derrick Henry. I actually think the negative case for Derrick Henry is easy to make, Scott. It's that father time is undefeated, but any other reason to be concerned about Derrick Henry?
Yeah, but by the way, just a shout out to Ray Garvin as well. I mentioned just being excited about being Justin Boone's teammate. The same thing goes for Ray, one of our other pickups this year. Just a great addition to the Yahoo Fantasy family, and a hearty welcome to him, and just excited to do some stuff with him this season. Yeah, Henry, what is it, 11th season? This is a guy who was worked like crazy in high school, although people weren't tackling him that much. He was giving up more punishment than he probably absorbed than he plays in college. At least when he first went to Tennessee, they kind of soft pedaled him early in the career, had other guys they wanted to use. Didn't seem to make sense, but he's led the league in carries in 4 of the last 6 seasons. Not going to catch a lot of passes. I think he actually could. Teams just gave up on that a long time ago. I don't know why getting Henry in space would be such a bad idea. You don't need him to run intricate routes. Just another look, get him tackled by the lesser people, the lighter people on the defense. But you know, Lamar Jackson, for all of his rushing chops, he is not a touchdown guy. So nobody's surprised Henry scored 16 touchdowns last year. He's basically got a floor of, what, 11 or 12 in a healthy season, and he could easily get back up to that 16 level again. It's just a matter of the mileage. At some point, every player is going to feel it. The efficiency is going to go down. Didn't go down last year, 5.9 yards per carry. That's what a mobile quarterback does for you. And you know, the Todd Monken offense, this Baltimore offense that we love, it hasn't always translated in the playoffs, but man, are the Ravens an absolute blast to watch offensively. It's just, how do you feel about, this is a guy, is age 28, is age 29, is age 30 the year to get worried about? He's in his age 31 season, and he's been worked really hard the last handful of seasons. So at some point you might get nervous about that, but I feel like he's already scored, you know, 10 or 12 touchdowns to even start the season. You know, Derrick Henry is such a consistent scorer. He's going to be, if your idea is like, I want somebody to do something every week, Derrick Henry's going to be one of those guys. I'm actually pretty confident about drafting him. And he's the archetype of a player I generally wouldn't draft, because I'd rather be a year early than a year late on guys. I just feel like I'm always breaking the rules for Derrick Henry.
Well, there are players that you have to break the rules for, right? I mean, I think this is when we hammer, like, well, he'd have to be an outlier to do this. He'd have to. Derrick Henry is already an outlier. Look at that guy. Most NFL running backs don't look like that. Like, he's already breaking the rules of the position by simply existing. And I actually think that if you go back to last year, the sort of case of when people were drafting him, kind of like holding, which is just funny to say this in hindsight, but like almost holding their nose and drafting him in like the late second, early third round at times last year, Scott, it was, well, okay, the efficiency is going to drop off, but he can still score like 15 touchdowns. I think that actually could happen this year, which maybe again would make him like a small loss at pick 7. He would be maybe more like what Boone has him at, pick 15 or something like that. I'm interested to hear, you know, Boone's kind of case actually against maybe, and not against, I mean, it's 15th overall. You're still very high on the guy, but like some of his concerns about this situation with Henry, because it's such a great ecosystem. Like, the efficiency could drop off for Henry and he becomes like touchdown or bust-ish. But again, that would maybe make him, yeah, like a really good second round value, just not a great first round value. But I'm still perfectly fine. Like, if you're on the board in the first round, Derrick Henry to me is still one of those guys you can absolutely take here and feel pretty good about it.
And we're talking about a guy who scored double-digit touchdowns in 7 straight seasons and might play in, as you would say, the best NFL offensive ecosystem in the league, right? I mean, nobody pushing him either. I mean, look at the guys behind him, Justice Hill, Keaton Mitchell. I mean, they're NFL players. They have reasons to be on the roster, but it's not like anybody can push for a much bigger role than they already have. It's going to be the Derrick Henry show. And again, I want people to understand Lamar Jackson is an amazing athlete. He's not getting tush pushes. He's not getting, you know, bootlegs at the goal line. He's going to score 3 to 5 touchdowns on the ground every year.
Let's get to another running back here. That's definitely, he's 29 years old, a little bit up there and coming off an injury plague season, not coming off a great season like Derrick Henry. That is the 8th overall pick, 49ers running back Christian McCaffrey. Scott, I would have thought we'd get like a second round discount on Christian McCaffrey here, but the people are not giving you one, not in Yahoo ADP, where again, he's the 8th overall pick. You have Christian McCaffrey ranked as your 15th overall player. You do not have him in your top 12. Make the case against Christian McCaffrey as the 8th overall pick here. I have a feeling I know a few of the points you might go to here.
Yeah, it's pretty basic. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's what? They list him at 210. I feel like he's like 202, 205 on a good day. But he's a lesser back physically. He's broken down a couple times. I mean, obviously, anybody in a year where no running back seemed to get hurt, Christian McCaffrey wrecked your season last year. And I'm reluctant to talk like that because, I mean, you know, if I took one NFL hit, I'd probably never walk again. These guys are warriors. These guys want to play. I think Christian McCaffrey's already a Hall of Famer, but he wrecked your season last year. He's had season wrecking injuries the last few years, like a couple of times. I don't love this offensive line. I think the backs actually behind him aren't bad. I could see them sprinkling in those guys maybe more than we're used to. I don't have the stomach for it. I realize that no running back is a safe bet to play 15 to 17 games. So we have to color all of them with a brush, but it doesn't mean they all have the same level of injury risk. I think McCaffrey carries too much risk to consider in the first round based on what he's done, based on what the medical resume looks like the last 4 or 5 seasons.
So, yeah, I mean, I think, again, that is a pretty clear case of why he could wreck your season as a first round pick. It happened last year. Now, the difference between this year and last year is he is not currently injured, right, Scott? I mean, he is not dealing with a calf injury that they're being weird about, right? He's actively participating in training camp. He's doing this to some poor dude that wears 46. This guy, I mean, God damn, that just is not great. But anyways, the optimistic case for Christian McCaffrey, or the upside case for Christian McCaffrey, is also equally obvious because we have seen it over and over and over again. From 2022 to 2023 with the San Francisco 49ers, he scored 671 half PPR fantasy points. The next highest scoring player was Derrick Henry in this span at 518. I mean, when he is on the field, nobody scores points like Christian McCaffrey, because not only is he in a great rushing ecosystem, he is also a freak show in terms of targets. He in that same span, he has a 19.6 target share. The next highest back is Bijan Robinson at 16.9, Austin Eckler 15.4. So running backs just don't get the ball thrown to them like Christian McCaffrey does. So again, it's just when he's out there, he's a unique force. 263 total yards in this span, the 2 years, 2022 to 2023. So that's the optimistic view for him, Scott. But let me ask you this, as somebody that is not taking McCaffrey in the first round, is not going to rank him here. And for me, I do have him as my ninth overall player. So I'm willing to say, hey, I will go down with the ship. I will take the risk. If you're somebody, by the way, if you're somebody out there that just doesn't want to do this, like you have one fantasy league against your buddies and you just don't want it to be over in 2 seconds when an injury happens, I get it. I'm not going to force you into taking Christian McCaffrey or tell you you're a dumbass for not taking him. You live your life. These are your teams. Do what makes you feel good. But you, Scott, as somebody that is not taking McCaffrey in this range, does that mean you're actively targeting a guy like Isaac Garendo later on in the drafts? Because like some running back is going to crush from this 49ers backfield. And is it a guy like Garendo later on for you?
Yeah, I would say I'm proactive with Garendo. And I'm also afraid that McCaffrey could beat me and I could regret not taking him. He just carries more risk than I want a first-round player to carry. And let me ask you one other thing, okay? And maybe this is a big nothing burger, because he really was never healthy last year. But he was extremely ordinary in the four games he played. He was half-point PPR scoring, running back 11, running back 16, running back 31, running back 34. I realized that was a failure of the entire team to a large degree. They lost three of those games. They weren't doing much. He played an incomplete game against Buffalo in the snow, so it's kind of hard to dock him for that. But you know, windows in the NFL, they just seldom stay open as long as we imagine. And this is a case where I would rather be the year early than the year late. And again, I already put this guy in the Hall of Fame, and he's in the Fantasy Hall of Fame as far as I'm concerned. He's somebody who, and just watching that video they played of him beating the player on the wheel route was gorgeous, right? It made me want to like, no, maybe I should move him up a couple of spots just because of that, because I have an emotional tie to him. Anybody who's played fantasy for as long as we have, you've had a team that Christian McCaffrey carried. It's hard to forget that. I thought he should have gotten more Heisman appreciation or contention when he was at Stanford. I thought he might have been the best player in the country at that point and maybe deserved a better shake in the voting. But I just can't get past the fact that I think he is more injury risk than the average running back because of his shape. And also, I do think Garendo is going to, even if McCaffrey's healthy, I think this might be a year where the second running back in this offense plays a little bit more than Shanahan generally employs.
See, that right there, that actually is what gives me the most pause, is what you just said, your last sentence there. Because look, Kyle Shanahan knows more about football than me. He runs the San Francisco 49ers. I'm a goofball that does podcasts from my home office. But if I was Kyle Shanahan, I might think about like, hey, Isaac Garendo is a guy who showed he can play. They just spent another fourth round pick on Jordan James, who has been banged up in the summer. So like, we don't know if he's gonna be a factor. And, you know, Shanahan falls in and out of love with these third and fourth round running backs, you know, faster than anybody. Okay. He's got a wandering eye at the position, but man, I mean, McCaffrey, again, in that same span where he's been an unbelievable producer, has been on the field for 74.3% of the snaps. By far, number one among running backs. Sixth in terms of percentage of team carries. What if in order to say, hey, we're trying to win the damn Super Bowl, okay, we're still trying to contend in this window, which is what I think the Niners want to do. What if they mix in a running back and, like, Garendo is more involved? That might not make Christian McCaffrey. I actually think Christian McCaffrey can still be fine as a first-round pick, and like, that's great. it could still happen, but he might not be that like league tilting player because they get another running back involved. And Scott, I actually think that might be smart. So that is definitely just someone who, that, you know, you got to consider here. I love Ray chiming in about, the Achilles, because Ray has torn his Achilles before. Now Ray unfortunately does not have to take 75% of his team snaps, which is probably good for him, but CMC might. So I don't know. It is. I get it. I get your perspective. I also see the unique scoring upside, and somebody that is generally a ceiling chaser, I probably would be okay with McCaffrey in the first round, but I understand the arguments against it. And I wouldn't be like, hey, Scott, you're crazy for not wanting to do this.
Just give me a second. Give me a sentence on the offensive line, because I think it's at best an average unit.
Yeah, I think you said that's the sentence. I think it's at best an average unit. And it's the thing that I think Purdy showed really well to play in chaos, but maybe it's not the same run game anymore. I think that's totally fair. Let's move on to the next player here. Lions wide receiver Amon-Ra St. Brown is the 9th overall pick in fantasy football Yahoo ADP right now. Scott, I mean, some of the stuff we said about Jahmyr Gibbs, all that offensive turnover, you also have to apply it to St. Brown too, but you are very, very bullish on St. Brown. You have him as the 7th overall player. So no concerns for you. Any concerns? How could it go wrong for St. Brown?
Yeah, I'm a volume chaser. And when I see a guy caught over 100 balls 3 straight years and, you know, the target shares that he's had, St. Brown is just, it's an easy guy to watch, right? As soon as you turn on the game, he already has 2 or 3 catches, it feels like. But they're not going to score 33 points again. The offense is going to regress. And St. Brown's touchdown rate the last 2 years is likely to regress also. It's possible. I'm not really sure where I come down on Jameson Williams year 3. He's one of those guys, he seems to make mental mistakes or sometimes emotional mistakes more often than I'd like. You know, he throws the ball at an opponent or he gets flagged for something silly, but he's such a special talent. And there's talk of maybe he's ready to spread his wings. He actually had a breakout season last year, so I don't want to say he's a breakout player because I feel like that's already happened. But maybe we haven't hit Jameson Williams's true ceiling yet. If he were to hit that ceiling, that does cut into St. Brown theoretically. But again, my heart isn't totally in it because I'm such a floor-driven guy in the first round. I think St. Brown has an extremely high floor, even if those 12 touchdowns probably aren't repeatable. Whatever. He's going to get so much volume that as long as he gets in the end zone 8 or 10 times, you'll get your money back on this guy.
Yeah, 4th in half PPR fantasy points among wide receivers in the last 3 seasons. 28 touchdowns. That, of course, like you said, maybe that comes down a little bit, but I don't know. I don't have him ranked as a first round pick. I think he's like a high second round pick, but that's only because I'm breaking ties in favor of some other guys at the position. I just think that there's a chance that, like, you know, the guys that we'll talk about when we get to my top 12, they could maybe target hog a little bit more. But I do think that the kind of like, it seems to be an every year insistence that no, this is the year Jameson Williams is going to take away from Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like, that's never going to happen. Amon-Ra St. Brown is a Jared Goff wide receiver, okay? Like, the reason I called him Bud Light Cooper Kupp before he got drafted by the Lions, ironically, and the former Rams quarterback who grew up with Jared Goff, was because, like, he just profiles so well as that security blanket wide receiver. And I think, like, he's never going to lose that, the catches and all of that type of volume. And I think, by the way, it's another guy that is getting better every single year. He's not just, I know this is a training camp clip we're showing right now, but he can work along the boundary a little bit more. He's not just a guy that's like a slot merchant at this point. So generally don't want to bet against like younger wide receivers firmly in their prime. And I'm not, again, there's just some other guys that I think I prefer more because of the target upside.
Totally reasonable.
One of those guys, by the way, that I am betting on big this year is the 10th overall selection. A beautiful transition here. Texans wide receiver Nico Collins. Man, it warms my cold, dark heart to see Nico Collins as a first round pick in Yahoo drafts. And it warms it even more, Scotty, to see you and I are both ahead of this 10th overall ADP at the 8th overall pick. So I'll carry the burden here. I'll be the first one to point out how it's not going to work out for Nico Collins. Here's how it's not going to work out for Nico Collins. He gets hurt, right? He misses time every single year with like soft tissue injuries. That could be an issue. That he is definitely someone that has an injury history. And like, if he bangs you because of injuries, well, it's happened before. That is number one. Number two, it is a very problematic offensive line. No way around it. I don't know that it can get out of the bottom 10 in the league. I think if it's the 20th best offensive line in the league, maybe that's good enough for the Texans unit to still be fine. But that's a concern. They've added some target. Now, I don't really care about the target competition. Guys like Christian Kirk, Jaden Higgins. I love Jalen Noel, but like none of those guys are Jalen Noel. I love those guys, but they're not eating into Nico's target total. The other thing is like maybe he just continues to run out as a true X receiver, doesn't really get like a lot of layups, and those layups go to Kirk or one of these other guys. So, you know, it's possible to pick the nits here, Scott. But I again, this one might be one that neither of our hearts are in, or considering he's our eighth overall player.
Yeah, we love Nico Collins on the show. We always have. And man, I mean, the last 2 years, 11.1 yards per target. That's elite, dominant player. Just he hasn't played that full season yet. We'll see how the Texans do with their new offense coordinator, Nick Cayley. But I mean, look, Bobby Slowick did a lot of things wrong last year, and you can't, Nico Collins is just, you can't screw that up. And even if the offensive line is problematic, I always feel like when an offensive line is bad, you can mask it more in pass blocking than you can in run blocking. So they're going to, there's no competition for him. There's a lot of interesting guys you can talk up. Some people are Kirk guys. They drafted two rookie receivers from the same college. We'll see if one of those guys pops. But with Collins, the only thing I can see going wrong with him is that he gets hurt. And also, his touchdown rate hasn't been maybe what you expect of a player that dominant. That I'm never going to blame Nico Collins for that. I mean, just like I never blame Terry McLaurin for that. I never blame DJ Moore for that. It's just one of those things. But Nico Collins is ready to dominate. He should be a first-round pick.
And Nico's better than those guys. You know, I love Terry McLaurin, and DJ Moore's had some really
good seasons. He's a higher ceiling for sure.
Yeah. He's just a different animal, man. I mean, he's so good. So yeah, it's my heart is definitely not going to be in it to talk down about Nico Collins. And I even think again, like I mentioned that Nico Collins like has only played X receiver. He's like the only NFL like elite tier one receiver that basically runs out as an 80-80 outside on the line of scrimmage player. What if Jaden Higgins takes some sacrificial X receiver duties away from Nico Collins and he moves around the formation like the next guy that we're going to talk about because their new OC comes from the Rams tree? Like then we're talking about a truly high ceiling. So let's get to that Rams wide receiver, Puka Nacua, 11th overall. This is a guy, Scott, that you have ranked outside the first round. You have this 16th overall player. I'm still holding on as the 7th overall pick, but getting more nervous by the day because of the Matthew Stafford injury. Is this back specter of Stafford the only thing that's holding you back from Puka?
So we've been saying a lot on this show, my heart isn't in it, my heart isn't in it, my heart isn't in it. Now, with all due respect to Puka Nacua, an outstanding football player in the Rams and Sean McVay, my heart's in this one. I am fading Nacua. When I do my fade article, Nacua is going to be not just in it, he may be the signature player in it. So what's the problem here? Well, Stafford's hurt. That's a problem. Nacua has not been a touchdown scorer in his pro career, and now they just added Davante Adams, who's put on this earth primarily to score touchdowns. Nacua was hurt a lot in college. That worries me. I could see this thing really collapsing. In fact, he mentioned he was my 16th overall player. I'm actually going to move him down a little bit more because I had a couple of guys. I think Drake London was one of the guys I had below Nacua. And it's one of those things where it's like, okay, I haven't looked at that closely enough recently because I would never take Nacua over London right now. They haven't figured out how to get Nacua to score touchdowns. And now they have a guy on the roster who's just a walking touchdown, a walking boundary win. And so not that Nacua is a bad player, but he's a physical player. I think there's a more injury risk than people might realize. The Stafford thing is a major concern. Man, Puka Nacua does not belong in the first round.
I got to say, I really don't disagree with almost anything you said there. I mean, number one, the injury risk is palpable with him. The reason he's a fifth round pick and the reason that he was such a big steal for the Rams is because he dealt with injuries in college. And we saw that last year where he missed time. Now, he's one of the rare guys that came back and was like, boom, right away, ready to rock. So there is that. Which was cool. That was awesome. And I hate to have this conversation about him after I've said all offseason, man, this guy graduated to the first tier of wide receivers. Like he's in that group. He's an elite wide receiver on his own. I think at some point he can have like a 12 touchdown season. Like it can just happen because he's that good. And especially because now I think with Davante Adams there as the X receiver, they're going to be moving Nacua around. Like he could run 4 touchdowns in this year because he gets more involved in the run game. But man, the Stafford thing is such a big deal. Like we cannot yada yada this right now, Scott. Jordan Rodriguez, she covered the Rams for the Athletic. She's now more of a national NFL writer. She hosts NFL Daily with Greg Rosenthal. We showed Greg's tweet earlier on the screen. She pointed out that the Rams are holding out Matthew Stafford from the joint practice with the Cowboys this week. And she pointed out that the Rams view these joint practices as preseason games because they don't do anything in the preseason. Like, they value those more than they do preseason games. The fact that Stafford's not playing is concerning. Like, if we wake up in September and, like, Jimmy Garoppolo is starting games at some point, week three, week four, well, guess what? Puka Nacua in the first round probably not going to age too well. So it's very easy to make the downside case for Puka Nacua. And because, Scott, I think that the turn right now, like, Amon Ross St. Brown, Malik Nabers, Drake London, who you mentioned, Brian Thomas Jr., like, there's just so many good wide receivers there that, like, yeah, if Matthew Stafford's on the field, he's better than Jared Goff. He's better than Trevor Lawrence. He's better than Michael Penix, probably. He's certainly better than this version of Russell Wilson, but he might not be on the field. Like, like right now, today, August 5th, we can say we don't want to break ties in favor of Puka Nacua. Now, that can change, right? August 25th, you and I get back together, Matthew Stafford's practicing, we feel a little bit better about it. But yeah, right now, pretty big concern.
I have a really simple rule, because I think by the third round, things get kind of dodgy. Let's assume a standard 12-team league. You should feel great about your first two picks. You should feel super confident about your first two picks. You should feel like it's really hard to nitpick them. And it's not, just not hard to nitpick Puka Nacua. That's why I'm not going to draft him. Understand the talent. And if the Stafford, you know, injury concerns are turned into nothing, okay, fine. But I mean, you know, Stafford's, how many more years is he going to play, right? I mean, this is not like this is somebody in the prime of his career. You know, I think he's had a Hall of Fame case too. And I, you know, I saw him revitalize the Detroit franchise that had been beaten down. And, you know, I'm all for Matthew Stafford, but maybe not this version of Matthew Stafford. I really don't want to watch Jimmy Garoppolo play football anymore, even under the umbrella of Sean McVay. So you should not be biting your nails when you're making a first or second round pick. You should feel like I have the best team in the league. And Puka Nacua just not fit my emotional drafting profile.
Last pick in the first round here is Ashton Jeanty, 12th overall Raiders running back. He's a rookie. Justin Boone and I did contrarian corner about the rookie running backs and how they could, you know, how that class can disappoint. And we took the harpoon. We hit the big fish right away at Ashton Jeanty. And I mean, I'll lay out my case because I have him as a second round pick, not a first round pick. You and Boone are 12th overall with him. What if this Raiders team is not that good? There's a lot of excitement about the Raiders, okay? And I get it. I think there's some pretty cool stuff that's going on in Las Vegas right now, but it's a really tough division. I would say it's an offensive line that is at best average. Like, it's a mid-offensive line at best. How many points is this Raiders offense going to score? And more importantly, Scott, look, I've repeated the stat about Chip Kelly where he was 5th, 4th, 7th, and 11th in rush attempts when he was a offensive play caller in the NFL. But the defense for the Raiders is going to be bad this year. Unless Pete Carroll is just like Dumbledore, a freaking wizard or whatever, like a puppet master. That's a bad secondary. It's after outside of Max Crosby, it's not a good defense. Again, like how good typically sometimes fantasy football can be simple. Good players, good teams that are going to score points. How good are the Raiders going to be, Scott? And how many points are they going to score?
All valid concerns. And, you know, we've seen good Chip Kelly and bad Chip Kelly during his NFL career. Offensive line play is more important to the running game than it is the passing game. Obviously, Jeanty's main level of production is going to come from the running attack. I don't really know what to expect from him as a receiver. He was dynamic as a receiver his second year at Boise State. Last year, his yards per reception, I realize that that's a stat with a lot of noise in it, but he goes from 13.2 yards per catch his second year to last year. He loses 20 receptions. And his yards per catch goes down to 6.0. I don't know if you charted Jeanty as a receiver, but I'd like to know what's a good explanation. No, granted, he ran for 2,600 yards. People say, what's the big concern? But to me, it's the efficiency. If they didn't want to call the plays as much, that's fine. But why was he all of a sudden a much less efficient receiver? Because he's going to need that bag in that club in his bag if he's going to survive on a Raider team, as you mentioned. Tough division. Defense is going to be substandard. If he pays off his ADP, he's going to have to catch 50 passes, you know, even if they don't go. Now, granted, there's not much pushing him, right? This depth chart, I mean, Raheem Mostert's already into his 30s. Sincere McCormick is the type of player you never even know if he'll make the final roster. I mean, he's just a vet for depth, but he's not really an upside player. So, and they drafted Jeanty so early, you know that they're going to play him. But I don't know if I trust Kelly. I certainly don't trust this offensive line. I'm concerned about the defense. And maybe, you know, Pete Carroll's had a great career, but, you know, the guy's coming for one last arc in the NFL. A lot of times that doesn't work out for coaches, you know. So, I'm, you know, Jeanty is a guy, there's a time where I would take him, and I will have some of him in my profile just to not sit it out. But I'm not really drafting him proactively either. I'm kind of on the fence on Gentry. I think this is a too big to fail thing with him, but I'm not expecting him to have like the Saquon Barkley rookie year either.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and that's kind of how I want to be. Like, if he gets the right place, I could maybe take him. It's not like a full fade or anything. But by the way, just on a few things, Raiders offensive line 24th in Brandon Thorne's offensive line rankings, which Brandon Thorne's the best offensive line evaluator among civilians out there. And he's really good. By the way, he has Jackson Powers Johnson slotted as a center, and he might not even start at center. He might play guard. Like, so there's some turnover there.
22nd on fantasy points too. So I mean, if you want another second opinion, you're going to get something that lines up with the Thorne records.
Not a good, like, mid at best, like I said. And again, you look at the best running backs in fantasy last year. Saquon Barkley, Eagles were awesome. Jahmyr Gibbs, Lions were awesome. Ravens, Derrick Henry, awesome. Fourth, Bijan Robinson. The Falcons were 17th in offensive points per game. Could the Raiders be the 17th best offense in the league? And again, is Ashton Jensen going to have a 13% target share? These are the kind of questions you have to ask yourself when you're considering Ashton Jensen as a first-round pick. So some things to consider there.
By the way, I mentioned the Barkley workload. Gentry had 397 touches in 14 games.
Great point.
That's something to consider.
Yeah, Boone and I brought that up as well when we talked about him. And I made the Trent Richardson comparison, which is disgusting. But like, Trent Richardson was a top 10 running back in fantasy his rookie year while averaging 3.3 yards per carry because he scored a boatload of touchdowns on a bad
deodorant
offense. Maybe at worst, Ashton Jensen gets some touchdown deodorant. But we're going to take our last break. When we come back, we will talk through our actual top 12 rankings and guys that we think should be first round picks, even if they're not in consensus rankings right now, right after this. All right, we are back. Scott, let's get into our top 12 rankings here. We will start with you. We will talk through your top 12 rankings. You have number one, Ja'Marr Chase, number two, Bijan Robinson, number three, Jahmyr Gibbs, number four, Justin Jefferson, number five, CeeDee Lamb, although you said you're going to make that switch there at this point. Saquon Barkley, sixth for you. Amon-Ra St. Brown, seventh. Nico Collins, eight. Derrick Henry, number nine. And here's where you differ. Number 10, you have Jonathan Taylor. Number 11, you have Brian Thomas Jr. Number 12, you have Ashton Jensen. Let's talk about Jonathan Taylor and BTJ. There's a big gap between us here on Jonathan Taylor. I have him 24th overall. You have him 10th overall. Make the case for Jonathan Taylor as a first-round fantasy pick this year.
Yeah, if Daniel Jones gets a starting job, which is not guaranteed, that's a step forward over whatever Anthony Richardson is right now. It also takes Richardson's threat of taking running production off the table. It takes that risk away. Taylor was a league winner in the fantasy playoffs last year and catches, you know, he's not a dynamic pass catcher, but he'll get some share of that. It's mostly that I saw Taylor be really good once he got healthy last year, even with an offensive ecosystem that had all sorts of problems. And Daniel Jones, whatever you think of Daniel Jones, he's better right now than Anthony Richardson, and he's probably better than whatever's left of Joe Flacco. So, and Taylor showed that he could actually survive in that environment. So to me, he's definitely a first round pick.
Pretty good case. I agree with you that it does come down to the quarterback here, which is I'm projecting right now Anthony Richardson to be the starter. Again, this is a fluid situation. We get back together on August 25th. Scotty, you and I can blow this all up again. But as of right now, the Colts announced today that Anthony Richardson is going to start the first preseason game, which kind of continues the momentum, the drumbeat that we've heard from camp that he's actually having a good camp. And I mean, brother, it is hard to figure out what the Colts want from quarterback, right? Because all offseason they talk about consistency. It seemed like they were hyping up Daniel Jones to be the starter. Then Anthony Richardson gets into camp. He's talking about how serious he's taking it. Like, hey, well, we don't want to give up. This is my Chris Ballard impression. We don't want to give up on Anthony. Come on, we patience. We're going to be patient. Well, you weren't patient with him. I mean, what are we talking about here? So last year, Jonathan Taylor was the eighth overall running back in fantasy on just a 6.3% target share. The big thing there was he had 18 goal line carries, which was only behind Josh Jacobs, Chuba Hubbard. Love Chuba Hubbard, Derrick Henry, and Kyren Williams, who signed a new contract today. So that's really, you're right. It comes down to the goal line carries, and I think we can't have Richardson under center, Scott.
Right, and if Richardson does get that job then obviously Taylor will bump down to the second round for me, and I'll probably be more in lockstep with where you have him right now.
All right, let's get to a guy that I'm sure you're excited to talk about here. Your 11th overall player, Brian Thomas Jr. Make the case for BTJ as a first-round pick, Scott.
Well, he was a first-round producer last year with Mac Jones playing a lot, with Doug Peterson in the city the whole season. Now you get an adult in the room with the play calling and Liam Cohen. Hopefully we can unlock what Trevor Lawrence is supposed to be. And as great as Travis Hunter is going to be, he's going to have some role on defense, and I don't think he becomes the alpha in this passing game right away. Brian Thomas, last year, they basically threw him into a situation that was impossible to win in, and he won anyway. I can't wait to get him on some rosters. Maybe I'm trying to play catch-up because last year I liked him but didn't have as much as I wanted to, but I feel like he can survive any situation, and now he actually has a positive situation with Liam Cohen in town.
Liam Cohen said on the Rich Eisen show that he envisions like 80% of the snaps for Travis Hunter. You know, this is all guesswork. I think it's going to be like a moving target. You know, this is fantasy managers and like fantasy analysts always, they approach this time of year like they're trying to figure out some predetermined outcome. I believe Jacob Sanderson, who does great work, he was kind of saying this. It's like, that's not how this is. Like, we're all trying to, it's a moving target. Like, things change once we get into the season. But that is the goal, is for 80% of snaps for Travis Hunter. And that doesn't make me nervous necessarily for BTJ. Like, I think these guys can coexist. I think Travis Hunter does need to bump up in the overall like rankings and the view right now. You know how much I love Travis Hunter, but yeah, BTJ is an 80% success rate versus press coverage player in reception perception in year one. You want to bet on that guy every single day of the week, twice on Sunday, ascending young superstar player. I guess the only he's having like a quiet camp while Travis Hunter's tearing it up. I don't know if that really matters to me. I think just if I was nitpicking him, I do think he needs to improve as a zone coverage player to be like to use your phrase, it's 10 targets off the bus for BTJ, right? He's in the Justin Jefferson club, where I almost said Justin Hunter because I was thinking about Travis Hunter and Justin Jefferson, and my God, that's two very different players. Justin Hunter is still the lowest success rate versus man coverage I've ever charted, Scott. If you can believe that, you probably can if you ever watch him play. How am I talking about BTJ? If he's gonna be like 10 targets off the bus player, there's some small growth that he needs to do. But why should we assume that he's not going to take that step here in year two? If you take him in the first round, I'm absolutely not gonna argue with it at all.
Good. I'm glad we're in agreement on that, and I'm glad he has the reception perception seal of approval.
My top 12 overall players, we'll get into it here again. Highlighting Scott, does not have Puka, does not have CMC in the first round. I've got a couple guys that are off my first round list as well. Number one, we already said, Ja'Marr Chase. Number two, Bijan Robinson. Number three, Saquon Barkley. Number four, Jahmyr Gibbs. Number five, CeeDee Lamb. Number six, Justin Jefferson. Number seven, Puka Nacua. I got to change that. I don't think I can have Puka Nacua at seven for too much longer with this Matthew Stafford thing. Number eight, Nico Collins. Yeah, like I'm looking at that right now. There's no way I would take Puka ahead of Nico Collins right now. Number 10, Derrick Henry. Number 11, Drake London. Number 12, Malik Nabers. Scott, big gap between me and you with 22nd Drake London. You have him at 22nd. I've got him here at 11. I'll make the case for Drake London, man. I think this guy could lead the NFL in targets this year. Michael Penix was dialed in on him late in the year. Darnell Mooney is hurt right now, which makes me a little bit nervous about the Falcons offense overall, because he's a really good player and helped them in the vertical game last year. And they love to play three receivers. They do not have a deep wide receiver room, but typically when a wide receiver misses time, it's not, all right, let's distribute, or let's boost up Ray McLeod or Casey Washington, one of these depth guys. It's let's get the football to Drake London more, who last year, Scott, had a huge change in his role. I know you hate Arthur Smith, right? He was an 80% on the line of scrimmage player, true X, in his first 2 years. He bumped down to being like more of a move around guy, took fewer than 60% of his snaps on the line of scrimmage last year, was more off the line because they moved him around. And that was super exciting to see. It was like great on over the middle routes, ran more dig routes than ever before. And Michael Penix can get it downfield. I think he can get it to him over the middle there. That's one area where the accuracy has to work on, obviously. But man, Drake London, I think, is a great late first round pick. Super high ceiling and a super high floor as well to me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm London. I'm glad that my ranking is actually ahead of ADP, even if it's not ahead of the Matt Harmon ADP.
You don't have to do that. That's a lot to ask.
So if I'm in a league with you, I got a problem. I'm not going to get Drake London, but I'm going to get him in a lot of leagues. And look, I know three games to prorate that out to a full season is kind of like a fool's errand, but I have to do this. Michael Penix played the last three games of the season. Drake London went ballistic. If you applied that to a full season for Drake London, you would get 124 catches, 1,994 yards, just 11 touchdowns. You'd live with that kind of volume. It's a concentrated offense. It's a defense that they've tried to fix it. I'm not sure they have. It's an indoor schedule mostly. Obviously, all their home games are indoors. Yeah, I'm in on Drake London. In fact, I think in one of the magazine drafts, I started Bijan Drake London. I'm like, yeah, I'm all in. Get me to the Falcons games. Get them on the main screen. Let's do it. Also, I think when you listed your top 12, I'm not sure if you mentioned Christian McCaffrey was your number 9 guy. We obviously talked a lot of CMC early on, but just wanted to clean that up if that was a case. But yeah, London, this is a case of Matt's, you know, all in with two hands. I'm, you know, I'm in with like 8 fingers and, you know, 9 fingers. I'm really pretty much right behind Matt. Matt's driving the bus. I have one of the front seats on the Drake London bus.
Yeah. Hey, buddy, you're welcome on the bus any damn time you want to get on the bus for Drake London. And Boone kind of splits the difference with us at 16. So I'm definitely I'm high. I'm going to be the high guy on Drake London. But if you could give me odds on who's going to lead the NFL in targets this year, my two like non-obvious bets would be Nico Collins and Drake London. And I think you'd probably get better odds on Drake London, more favorable towards you. So, yeah, I mean, I think the guy's going to smash this year.
18 targets in the Carolina game. I realize it was overtime. Yeah. So you get a few extra snaps, but man, I just love seeing those.
Gotta play the Panthers twice.
The bus guys, there aren't that many guys who, again, off the bus, they have 10 targets, and not just 10. Drake London's going to have weeks where it's like, you know, I was winning my game, and then Drake London had 19 targets, had 17 targets, had, you know, caught 12 balls, whatever. That's going to happen. Drake London is going to single-handedly turn losses into wins this year.
Yeah, this is like, again, the difference between a guy like Brian Thomas Jr., who, to be fair, like Brian Thomas Jr. can take a pass that's 3 yards down the field and house it better than Drake London can. So if you like explosive plays, you're going to be more BTJ. But if you're like a guy that wants the 10 targets off the bus, Drake London is such a consistent zone beater and such a consistent over the middle player. Like, he's going to get 10 targets every single week. I don't think you can go wrong. By the way, like, I'm going to transition this into my 12th overall player, which is Malik Nabers. I think sorting between Drake London, Malik Nabers, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Ashton Jeanty, Devon Achane, and Brian Thomas Jr., super difficult to me, which means, Scotty, I love picking at the turn.
I was just going to ask you what your preferred slot was this year in a 12-teamer.
Give me the turn. I don't know. We did the Bob Lung was emailing us today about like the picks in the Kings Classic. I checked in on mine. Right. I believe I have the 11th pick. I was like, let's freaking go, baby. Which, by the way, very excited to see you at the expo this weekend. Excited to draft against you. Yeah, always a sweat when I'm drafting against Scott because he's so good at this, especially in the salary cap formats. But yeah, man, I was like, I'm jacked about that because I can pick two of those guys. Like, and again, I mean, if I want to go wide receiver, London Nabers, London St. Brown, if I want to go London Ashton Jeanty, Nabers, Devon Achane, that's a pretty great start. And then you come back in the third round and there's some decent bets there. But Malik Nabers, number 12 overall pick for me. This guy's so good. Like, he's so good. He's good at the stuff that we talked about where he's consistent. That's like 12 targets off the bus, Scott. They get him the football in all kinds of different ways. And for all of Russell Wilson's flaws, he gave George Pickens a career high in catchable downfield targets last year. And that has been the talk, moon balls to Malik Nabers down the field. Malik Nabers in reception perception last year, obviously, overall incredible. You know, nobody's gonna be surprised about that. But it's in ways like we just didn't get to see enough of him. 64.4% success rate on 9 routes, 62.5% success rate on corner routes, 92.9% success rate on post routes. How many downfield targets from Malik Nabers as a rookie do you remember? Like the one against the Colts from Drew Lock? Not a lot. Again, for all of Russell Wilson's flaws, and there's a lot of meat that's going to be left on the bone with Russell Wilson over the middle of the field, but those routes, he's going to be smashing on those routes with Malik Nabers this year.
Yeah, it's a sin that the Giants averaged 6.0 yards per attempt last year with Malik Nabers fresh out of the box. And that's obviously a condemnation of their quarterback room. And all we're asking Russell Wilson to be is better than Daniel Jones, Drew Locke, and Tommy DeVito, who were the three starters. It was mostly Jones, but Locke and DeVito both started multiple games. So not that high of a bar to clear. And you have to love if you draft neighbors. And if you're on multiple leagues, you have to have some neighbors somewhere. Is you love yes. that the entire coaching staff is cooking up plays for neighbors 24/7. They know he's the feature guy in the offense. You know, the target share is going to be enormous. The raw target volume is going to be big. They may be a team that has to throw the ball a lot anyway. I feel like Neighbors hit his floor last year only because everything around him was bad. And even then, he was a very, very good player. And all we want is Russell Wilson to be a little bit better, or maybe demonstrably better than what that quarterback room was like last year. And you know, also Neighbors, there's going to be intricacies of the game that he'll understand better. In his second year, he came out early, of course. Yeah, I mean, Malik Neighbors, man, if you want to draft Neighbors in the first round, I'm not going to say you're wrong. And this is another reason why Matt and I both talked about favoring the late part of the first round. It's because I want Malik Neighbors on a lot of my rosters. I'm totally with you. I may have him again, just like Drake London, maybe I'm a slot or two behind you on Neighbors, but it's not for any lack of affection or any lack of conviction in the pick.
Oh, I mean, quite literally one spot. You have him 13th. And by the way, Boone has him 8th. So Boone is the highest among us on Malik Neighbors here, which should tell us something because Boone is good at this. And yeah, I mean, look, as you said, there are details of the game that he can get better at. He was 62nd percentile success rate versus zone last year, which is that's better than BTJ. But like, yeah, imagine if he takes like two or three steps ahead. We're talking about a guy that he's already there's been. I was just talking about this with James Coe today. There's been five players over the last three seasons to clear 30% of their team's targets. Devontae Adams, who did it twice. Tyreek Hill, who did it twice. AJ Brown did it. And then it was only four. So then it was Malik Neighbors. Like that's the type of like target total that we're talking about here. Just a freakish ability to get open and make explosive plays too. Like, yeah, great. Again, great player. Obviously, again, I love to pick at the turn because I can potentially get a Neighbors share here and there. Let's just talk about two more names before we get out of here, Scott, real quick. Two other names to consider as potential first-round picks, especially the second one. 15th overall, we have Packers running back Josh Jacobs. You have him at 14, I have him at 18. And then the 17th overall player in Yahoo ADP is Dolphins running back Devon Achan. Scott is at 21st, I'm at 15th, so I'm a little bit more in on Achan, but neither of us view him as a first-round player. And let me tell you what, there's a lot of people in the fantasy community that do, Scott. And I think the argument that I've heard is that year one, it was freakish rushing efficiency, right? He had the 7.8 yards per carry. Year two, it was ridiculous, you know, receiving usage where he led the position in targets. He got all those screens. And I think the argument is, what if both of those things happen? Or what if just one of them, like if both of them happens, freak ceiling. If just one happens, well, then he still has a great floor. My argument is, what if neither of them happens? Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think that's possible. I don't think that that's being discussed, but what if neither of them happens? So what are your concerns about Achan? Because, again, you have him at 21st overall.
Do I trust his quarterback? No. Do I trust his play caller? No. Do I trust his offensive line? Heck no. And we're still talking about a 5'9", 188 guy. So the touch, there has to be a reasonable ceiling on his touches. So you need to, I mean, 12 touchdowns last year. He scored 11 on very low volume his first year. And then last year, he wasn't anywhere near as efficient where things fell apart. And this team, I think this team is a tinder keg, man. Tyreek Hill is not happy. And he seems to change his tune every day. One day he's happy, one day he isn't. One day he's like, hey, everybody's going to come out for stretching. Next day he's not there stretching. You know, I mean, pick a lane, Tyreek Hill. I don't think Tyreek Hill is going to be a Miami Dolphin much longer. I think there's a decent chance he doesn't finish the season in Miami. Last year, after week one, he never had a reception over 30 yards. I realize a lot of moving parts there, some things that weren't his fault, but I don't trust the Dolphins, man. Maybe you can talk me to Jalen Waddle, but there are not a lot of Dolphins I'm going to draft. And Achan is the guy who's the most expensive, really. And all the pieces around him, running backs are, everybody in the NFL you can say this about, but especially with running backs, they are functions of their environment. And how can you positively talk up the environment in Miami? I can't do it with a straight face.
No, I agree with you. And it's the Dolphinsness of it all. I do want to take Jalen Waddle. I think a really good player and somebody that's just a little undervalued right now. And what if the roles kind of flip between him and Tyreek Hill? I think that's possible. But second in the NFL last year in team target share was Devon Achane, 15.3. You know, some of those plays I liked, some of them I didn't. I do think he has a really high floor. I just, again, I questioned the ceiling just because of the Dolphins offense, but I still am totally fine with him as an early second round pick. So again, if I get one of those alpha dog wide receivers, we're talking about London, Neighbors, and I want to go running back, I do think Achane's a fine second round pick, but it is an ecosystem that I am a little freaked out about. Scott, hell of an episode. We tried our best to talk down some of the best players in fantasy football. We tried to get the order right of the first round. What do you got working on right now that the people can check out on the website?
Yeah, you know, just all football all the time. And do me a favor, Matt talks about subscribing to this podcast, as you should. Subscribe to the Yahoo Fantasy Football newsletter, which is going to be coming your way twice a week during the preseason. And it's going to be fun. It's going to be punchy. It's going to be informative. It's going to help you be a better fantasy player. And so that to make me happy. Look, I'm still going to be doing a bunch of media hits. I'll be on this show periodically. I'll be on social media. But you want to make me happy, subscribe to the newsletter.
Subscribe to the newsletter. Scott does a great job. So just make sure you're dialed into that. Like he said, is going to make you a better fantasy player. And Scott's going to be on the show a ton. He's going to be on the show a couple more times this week. So yes, make sure you're dialed in here with us. If you haven't noticed yet, if you're not following us on social media, a reminder, we are celebrating 28 years of Yahoo Fantasy with 28 days of fantasy promotions. Today, as a part of Yahoo's Day of Fantasy, instant mock drafts are now available for Yahoo Fantasy Plus subscribers. Threw up the tweet here, so make sure you check it out at Yahoo Fantasy. Simulated drafts tailored to your league settings, run at any time. Tons of great settings there, so make sure you are dialed into that. On Wednesday, we will be back. Yahoo Fantasy and Fantasy Life contributor Chris Allen is going to join me live at 5 p.m. Eastern for a very special podcast as I reveal some of the clues from my draft day blueprint article for the 2025 season. You don't want to miss that. Until then, we are out.